Good morning and welcome to Thursday Morning Roundtable. Thank you very much. It must be something about that this is President's Week or Founding Fathers Week or whatever it is, but here we are, and thank you all for being here. I wanted to make a quick announcement about next week to remind you, in case you had forgotten, that our speaker next week is Catherine Bertini, and she's a professor at Maxwell. She was also an assistant secretary general of the United Nations, and we first met her several years ago when she had come off a 10-year tour as executive director of the World Food Program, which is the United Nations' largest, actually the world's largest humanitarian aid effort. And she will be talking to us about issues about humanitarian aid. So you won't want to miss that one. Certainly it's very timely given the crisis in Haiti, not to mention a lot of the other issues going on around the world. So that will be next week, and look forward to seeing you here then. But today it is my pleasure to introduce Walt Shepherd, who will introduce the media unit. Originally, the district attorney Fitzpatrick was going to be here, but duty called. And so when I learned that I was going to be introducing Walt, I did a few quick Google searches. And I learned things that, of course, you already know about Walt, that or you may. He's been a junior high school teacher. He's been a community organizer. Of course, he's been a journalist for many years. You know him for years from the New Times and now as editor of the City Eagle. But what I didn't find, what you may not know, is that he recently became a grandfather for the first time. So, and I've been talking to Walt a couple of months ago, and he was talking about his daughter, Lorca, and I knew how proud he is of her. She's a filmmaker, a documentary filmmaker, award-winning filmmaker. So I thought I would Google Lorca Shepherd and see what I came up with. And so, of course, I came up with, you know, some articles about her filmmaking and the award that she won for, I forgot the name of it. But anyway, I came up with another article that was very interesting. So if you will give me a minute. This is from the New York Times, March 18th, 1981. Wonder Woman and Little Wonder Woman have struck again, this time winning a victory over New York State in their struggle against sexism. The dynamic duo are Karen DeCrow, a lawyer and well-known feminist, and her young protege, Lorca Shepherd, a 13-year-old Syracuse girl who, it may be recalled, appeared in Wonder Woman costumes in Atlantic City 6 years ago to protest the Miss America pageant. Now, as a result of a new effort conducted in civilian clothes in State Supreme Court in Syracuse, New York State has been ordered to accept girls at their Camp Rushford, an all-boys environmental camp in Allegheny County. Under an order signed last week by Judge John Conway, girls must be accepted at the camp by the 1982 season. Ms. DeCrow, who filed the suit on behalf of Ms. Shepherd, said the victory had been especially sweet since her chief opponent was her former law professor, Thomas J. Maroney, Assistant State Attorney General. And, of course, we all know Karen DeCrow and Tom Maroney. So that might not immediately seem relevant to today, but, of course, it is, because Lorca is Walt's daughter, and Walt is forever the rabble-rouser. And, in fact, will be receiving an award from the Alliance Network for his outstanding advocacy for the rights of women and minorities. So congratulations, Walt, and the media unit.
Thank you. I have to add, I made the Little Wonder Woman outfit for Lorca for that march. Good morning. Early, but I know we can do better than that. Good morning. Yeah, okay. Well, you know, a year ago, the U.S. Attorney General called America a nation of cowards for not engaging in the dialogue on race. The White House immediately chilled him out. So much for the current generation. But there is hope. Recently, there was a meeting of a teen planning committee for the state 4-H convention to be held at the Great New York State Fairgrounds in April. The staff said to the teen planning committee, "Who do you want for a keynote speaker?" They said, "You mean somebody making a speech? We don't want nobody making a speech." So the staff said, "Well, what do you want for the keynote?" And they said, "We want the media unit to come and do a show." So the staff said, "Do you know which show you would like?" And they said, "Yeah, we want from the back of the bus." Now think about this. Predominantly Caucasian rural teenagers wanting to engage the dialogue on race. Since 1996, we've been trying to promote that dialogue with From the Back of the Bus. There are a lot of people to thank for particularly this month's tour. Certainly Sandra for inviting us, thank you very much. We're very happy to be here. Ms. Terry Tonies, who is providing a great deal of support at the Civic Center, where later today we will be doing three shows of this performance. And also Jerry Cohane and the folks at the Renaissance Hotel, who give accommodations when we bring groups from out of town. In April, we're bringing a group from Rochester and hopefully a group from Sierra Leone. Also, we need to thank Sheriff Kevin Walsh for a great deal of programmatic support at the Justice Center, where they turn out more GEDs than anywhere else in the county, and we perform regularly. Also, we need to thank the Destiny Workforce, temporarily on hold, for creating a scholarship for one of our folks, and to DA Bill Fitzpatrick for creating a scholarship in his father's name for one of our folks. While the talkback's going on, some of our supporters will be passing baskets. Our Christina Maranovic, after 4 years with us, has been accepted at the Wells College Drama Program and will be needing $3,000 to get there. So we will be passing the baskets. Please contribute. Contributions are tax deductible. Checks can be made out to the Media Unit Scholarship Fund. The address is in the program if you want to send one from home. There is a cast change today. Malik will be played by George Stroman. And we hope you enjoy the show.
I was born by the river in a little tent. Oh, and just like the river, I've been running ever since. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. It's been too hard living, but I'm afraid to die, 'cause I don't know what's up there beyond the sky. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come.
I'd rather hear both sides of the tale. See, it's not about races, just places, faces. Where your blood comes from is where your face is. I've seen the bright kids go. I'm not gonna spend my life being a color.
Do you agree with me when I saw you kicking dirt in my eyes?
Exact change. Does everybody know what bus they're taking? This here's Ms. Ruthie's bus. Ruth Ann May Still Hicks. Ms. Ruthie was born in 1941 in Ruvale, Mississippi. She had a job housekeeping there, and every day, no pennies. She rode the bus to work. Back then, she says, there was a section for coloreds and a section for whites. Ms. Ruthie had to sit in the colored section in the back of the bus. And if the white section got full and another white person got on, Ms. Ruthie had to give up her seat. No matter how tired she was, no matter how much her feet hurt, well, Ms. Ruthie says that this is the bus. Not the one Miss Rosa Parks sat on, but the one that Claudette Calvin wouldn't give up her seat on before Miss Rosa Parks did it. Back when Claudette was just 15 years old. Cops beat her up real bad, too. Of course, it was Miss Rosa Parks who started all the fuss down there in Montgomery. But Ms. Ruthie always said Claudette was awful brave. To sit down for what she believed in like that? Ms. Ruthie says she just doesn't know about young people today. If they'd risk everything they had just to mix up a bus. You see, back when Ms. Ruthie was coming up, people had to separate. Because it was the law. Now? It's like we're doing it on our own. Almost like the law has never changed. Ms. Ruthie says we don't hate each other. No, that's not the problem. She says we're all just scared of each other. And the worst part is, nobody seems to think anything's wrong. Come gather around people wherever you roam and admit that the waters around you have grown and accept that it soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone, for the times they are a-changing.
You know, our ancestors died for the right to vote.
And until Obama ran, we didn't vote.
And our ancestors died so we wouldn't have to sit at the back of the bus.
And now we sit at the back of the bus.
Check it out.
Guess what? The people from the Oprah Show called my mom. Guess what? The people from the Oprah Show called my mom. Guess what?
The people from the Oprah Show called your mom.
Yeah. Someone gave them my name. They said, a panel of wiggers. So they asked me, how do you dress? How do I dress? You know, they say, are your pants 8 sizes too big? Well, I didn't make the panel. My mom said it was okay. She said it was nice to be recognized for something. Not getting on the Oprah show got me thinking, though. Like, you know how a Muslim prisoner asked Malcolm X in the movie if he has ever known a good white person? He thinks about it, and he hasn't? Not getting on the Oprah show made me wonder if Malcolm X's answer would have been different if he had known me. If I had known Malcolm X, I would have told him about riding a bike. White people ride a bike with the wind so favorable at our backs, we don't even notice our advantage. It's hard for us to imagine what it must be like, how it must change everything born biking into a headwind. We've become so accustomed by having the wind at our backs, so spoiled by this good fortune, that it seems a great injustice that the wind should subside or switch directions or blow even for a minute in any other way. Anyway, not getting on the Oprah show made me think of that time in elementary school when I made my discovery. Michael Jackson, Prince, and all those other great singers I stood around admiring in the record store display windows were black, which made me flash on all my sports heroes being black, which made me flash on all the wittiest, the coolest, the strongest, the most agile, and the most precocious kids I knew were black. In part, this was because most of the whites I knew were unusually dull and spoiled. But next to the black kids I knew, my voice was flat, my personality dull, my complexion pallid. I never knew race was a national obsession. I thought I discovered my own private secret.
You want to hear a secret? Check this out. I've been working on my college scholarships, doing just fine till I get to that same question on everyone. Race, optional. Caucasian, African American, Native American, Hispanic, Asian, or other, please specify. Of course you can leave that one blank, but everyone knows what that means. White as a cake of Swan soap in a blizzard. The last one I did, I checked other please specify under race and wrote, runner up, New York State, 100 meter dash. Guess I won't get into that school. But how am I gonna get in anywhere? The deck is stacked. Anyway, I heard that even SAT scores get looked at with a little more, shall we say, understanding if you're a racial minority. And that minute, I stopped worrying about getting into college and started worrying about paying for college. There was the same question, all the scholarship applications. Even the one for the National Runners Association. And don't even get me started on all the really big scholarships. The ones for everyone but the poor little white girl. I mean, it's like a water fountain from the 50s. They should just put up a big headline saying, colors only. I mean, it's not fair. I work hard, I stay on track, I have never broken a major rule, or at least gotten caught for it, but that's the same thing. You know, if I was black, I could get into any college I want to, and get it all paid for. And if I didn't, I'd just play the race card and they'd have to take me anyway. What? Don't look at me like that. I'm not racist or anything. I'm all for equal opportunity. I just want my fair share, and that's my secret.
What, you think I like it? I worked hard to get to where I am. Harder than a lot of these white folks, I bet. You think I like wondering, not knowing if I would have done well on something if no one knew that I was black? like I need an extra hand. The thing is, I don't need an extra hand, but when I fill out an application, I feel uncomfortable. It's like, if I don't put down that I'm black, do I seem ashamed of something that I'm actually proud of? Or if I do put down that I'm black, do I get the spot over someone else who deserves it more just because I'm black? Or is that what people are going to think no matter how well I do? See, I know they mean well with their policies and they're trying to make things more equal, but the whole thing makes me feel degraded. And these white folks thinking we're not good enough or we're not smart enough. I don't want to get into anyone's school to fill anyone's quota or show some numbers to some board of trustees. I feel if I get into the school, it should be because I worked hard and I deserve it all on my own. But people, they don't see it that way. And I see those white students thinking it. I can hear them whispering it. You know why she's here, don't you? The thing is, they don't. Neither do I.
Come writers and critics who prophesize with your pen. And keep your eyes wide, the chance won't come again. And don't speak too soon, for the wheel's still in spin. And there's no telling who that it's naming. For the loser now will be later to win. For the times, they are a-changin'.
Hey, wake up, wake up. You've got the power.
My people in the East, yo, you got to wake up. Midwest 30 top, yo, you got to stand up. All my homies in the West, yo, you got to wake up. Wake up, wake up, wake up, wake up.
You know, I have to call a white boy I know to get some more accurate information.
I wonder what's the first thing a white girl thinks in the morning.
They put me on hold.
Do they wake up in the morning being glad they ain't purple?
I know what's the first thing a white boy does. He gets up, looks in the mirror, says, "You are a god."
Do they remember mama?
Do they worry about getting to work? Do they work?
I know. The first thing a white girl does in the morning is fling her hair.
There. Now that's done. I guess I'll go and water my plants.
I know the first thing a black girl does in the morning. She gets up, looks in the mirror and says, "Is my weave okay?"
But what kind of white boy am I? Am I that extra gnarly surfer dude who hits every wave along the coast? Or am I that straight line politician? Not gonna do it. It wouldn't be prudent at this juncture. Or am I some Harold type cowboy? Don't worry, little lady. We can ride off to the sunset.
Am I the pole white girl with an old jelly jar? Or am I the sophisticated Protestant suburbanite with a two-volume slug already in a water carrier leading me up the stairs? Shoot heads of dolls and nasty white husband person's underwear.
I know what kind of black girl I am. I am ghetto fabulous with two snaps of circle saying, "Girl, oh no you didn't."
They put me on hold again. But I need to know, do they cruise the Caribbean in their fancy yachts, sipping Dom Perignon and playing shuffleboard with Skip, Biff,
and Muffy? Or do they play as a door run, wrap themselves in white sheets, and go tiptoeing down to the kitchen to make
Maxwell House coffee?
Oh, let me go down to my kitchen in my old school to make me some fried chicken and Kool-Aid.
A typical white boy day would go something like this. Early breakfast, morning fax at the office, power lunch, cellular phone calls, all the way home where I kick off my loafers and flip on CNN to check out the Dow Jones Industrial Average.
On my way through the city, I'd smile at all the black and Puerto Rican people, hoping they couldn't tell I wish they'd go back to where they came from.
I know they don't belong here.
Oh, no, you didn't!
And I wonder why that cover lady hasn't arrived to clean my house yet. And I wonder why God gave them such clear complexions, and why it takes them so long to develop
wrinkles.
But I don't have to worry about that. I'll just stand here and fling my hair. Because I'm a white girl and I don't mess up anything.
And I'm a black girl and y'all can't tell me nothing.
And I'm a white boy and I know everything. But you know, I still have to call a white boy I know to get some more accurate information.
And I should call a white girl I know to get some accurate information.
What do you mean you need some more accurate information about a white girl? Why can't you get some more accurate information about a black girl?
Because I already have enough accurate information on myself.
Well, what are you, prejudiced or something?
Oh, no, it was just a role I was playing.
Well, you don't see me trying to act black.
To tell you the truth, I don't think you can act much of anything.
I. Yo, what's up? Yo, what's good?
What's good?
Today, I'll be a black girl.
Oh, yeah. What kind of black girl?
Like Martina Luther King.
Ooh. Oh, you mean Martin Luther King? The civil rights leader who won the Nobel Prize. The man who said, "I have a dream."
That was then. This is now.
Martin who?
Martin Luther King?
Who?
The civil rights leader?
I didn't hear what was going to happen.
No, he's not a cop.
Okay.
He's cool then.
The Nobel Prize winner?
Oh, the boxer, yeah. Right? He was hitting Mike Tyson. He was bleeding and all that.
No, he's not a boxer.
Don't know. Never heard of him.
The man who said, "I have a dream."
Oh, you had that same dream too? The one where you're running and you can't get anywhere. It's like you're going in slow motion.
Ms. Ruthie used to say, we're all fighting for the same thing. Change. Whether it be black or white or old or young. We're all dancing the same dance.
It's really hard coming back to school now.
I mean, it's so embarrassing.
Having people look at me like I'm some kind of freak or something.
My whole life has changed.
I feel different.
It's like all of a sudden I've gotten old.
It's been more than a month since I was...
Since it happened.
But it feels like yesterday.
I keep reliving the whole thing in my mind over...
And over?
And over.
It's like a nightmare.
But worse.
Because it doesn't go away in the morning.
It happened when I was in the park.
He pulled up in his car to ask me something.
So I went over to him.
I mean, he goes to my school.
He's in my math class.
What could he do?
That's when he threw open the car door and grabbed
happens.
Me. Afterwards, I just walked around in this daze. All I could do was cry.
And cry.
And cry. I felt so humiliated.
So
violated.
So angry. I was afraid to go home.
It was 2 weeks before I told anyone.
The police arrested him. I had to go down to identify him. It was awful.
This guy there was his lawyer, and he kept glaring at me like I was so much dirt.
I still feel so ashamed.
Even though I'm the victim.
And I have nothing to be ashamed about.
But some people, they treat me differently now.
They have this attitude, like the whole thing is my fault.
My fault.
Can you believe it?
Like my boyfriend. He doesn't want to have anything to do with me.
I've lost some friends.
They say I've changed.
I'm always depressing now.
They don't understand why I'm making such a big deal about this.
After all,
I should have known better to be walking around by myself in the first place, right?
Yeah.
Great friends.
But the right.
I have changed.
Like I said...
I've gotten old. Hard to tell you how I feel.
Everything is so unreal.
This life is a hard thing to get through.
When you're born, they carry you.
When you're gone, they bury you.
In between, you're on your own.
Hard to stand there all alone.
Lord, this hill is hard to climb. Gonna climb it. One more time, Lord, this life is a hard thing to live, and harder still to
up to the sky. Lovers, they may cause you tears. Go ahead, release your fears. Stand up and be counting. Don't be ashamed to cry. You gotta be bad. You gotta be bold. You gotta be wiser. You gotta be hard. You gotta be tough. You gotta be stronger. You gotta be cool. You gotta be calm. You gotta stay together. Go ahead, release your fears. My-
Dakar, New York City, Jackson, Mississippi, and Louisville, Kentucky. Hi, I'm Miss Ann, and I'll be serving you here at the back of the bus. We will be cruising at a very high speed, so shackles must be worn at all times. To put on your shackles, take your right hand and close the metal ring around your left hand like so. Repeat the action using your left hand as to secure the right. If you have any problems bonding yourself, I'll be more than glad to assist. Once we've reached our destination, the driver will turn off the shackle up sign, allowing you a chance to stretch and dance around the aisles a bit. Otherwise, shackles must be worn at all times.
No shackles for me.
No shackles.
No shackles for me.
No shackles.
No shackles for me.
No shackles.
We ask that you please refrain from calling and response singing between seats, as that sort of thing can lead to rebellion. Shackle up. There is no drumming allowed on the bus. Can you repeat after me? No drumming.
No, no drumming.
With a little more enthusiasm, please. No drumming.
No drumming.
That was great. Once we're underway, I'll be around with magazines and earphones can be purchased for the price of your firstborn male. If you have any problems, press a little button overhead and I'll be faster with you than you can say, go down, Moses. Thanks for writing Celebrity.
Hey, what's the movie on this bus?
Ooh, I'm sorry. Movies are shown only on preferred routes.
No movie? So I get shackled and there's no movie? But you got the key, right?
I don't got the key.
You got the key, right?
You have the key.
I've got the key?
You've got the key.
Are you sure? I mean...
You've got the key.
I checked my pocket.
You've got the key.
I did not see any...
You've got the key.
Okay, well... Oh.
You got the key.
I had the key this whole time.
Hello? Pookie. Spike. Spike's here. Hey, Pookie. Friday? Hold on a second. Pookie wants me to go see Love and Basketball with him on Friday, and I don't know what to do.
What, you don't like black movies or something?
No, they're okay. The thing is, he's black. I mean, he's a really nice guy, but what will my mom think? And what will my grandma think? And what will my friends think? Will we hang out with his friends or mine? Hey, could my kids check other please specify on a race?
Right.
But then how would they specify? And what side of the lunchroom would they sit on?
Right.
And what music would they listen to? And what will we eat for family gathering?
He's not asking to marry you, and you're running up my minute.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, sure, I'll go with you, Pookie. Why don't I just meet you there, okay? All right. Hey, I can celebrate Christmas and Kwanzaa this year.
The neighborhoods were never the same after the riots. They changed my world forever. Suddenly, my preppy clothes, the furniture in my house, and my piano lessons were things that just separated me from the new kids moving into the neighborhood. The white people, they moved out overnight, selling those big, beautiful homes for peanuts. And our black friends who didn't own their homes moved away to areas where they said the schools were better.
Look, none of us are born knowing the best way to live in a place as racially loaded as America. I'm no authority, but I pretty much know where the potholes are. Only because I've fallen in them so many times. But the funny thing is, I grew up thinking black people ruled the earth.
The new families that moved into the neighborhood were different. Just a mother, two, three, or four kids. If there were a father, he'll usually be the father of one of the kids, the youngest one, but not the whole family.
In the new family, they had like several different last names taped to their mailboxes. And they ate things I never even heard of, like mayonnaise sandwiches.
I owed my inverted worldview to two contradictory sources. I went to a big university lab school, which was cool, but I had to walk through the hood to get there. At school, most of the black kids were way richer than I was, and their parents were all famous for something, and got to be speakers at school all the time. And I always figured, wow, if there's a speaker at school, and it's your mom or dad, that's power. But on the way home, the gangs ruled. And before I understood the power of money, politics, and prestige, I understood the power of I could get my butt kicked.
At first, there were just one or two girls who were pick on me and threaten to beat me up after school. I was dealing with a new threat every day. I tried to make friends, but wouldn't ask them to come play jacks on my porch or offer to let them play with my Barbies. They called me white girl. I never got why they called me white girl. But my father, he organized postal workers to go to the March on Washington. He said we were all in the same boat. Until the neighborhood changed, I didn't think differences existed among blacks.
So, what's my place? If Malcolm X had known me, would it have made a difference? Even in my own mind, I'm still so far from a model white person. And even if such a description is proper, I've yet to meet anyone who can fill it. I was, after all, born biking with my back to the wind. And I know that hanging a U just to see what it's like on the other side doesn't redress any kind of karmic balance. Anyway, I don't have time to think about it. I've got to use all the energy I've got just to get through each day without being paralyzed by a million depressing moral dilemmas.
Come, senators, Congress, please heed the call. Don't stand in the doorway, don't block up the hall, for who that is hurt will be who that has stalled. There's a battle outside and it's raging. It'll soon shake your windows and rattle your walls, for the times, they are a-changing.
When I was little, the Lone Ranger was my hero. He had a horse, a sidekick. He went around righting wrongs and punishing injustice. I wanted to be like that. It looks so easy. You can always tell the good guys from the bad guys by the color of their hats. White for good, black for bad. Simple, right? But I don't know. None of the guys in my neighborhood ever wore cowboy hats. And even if we did, I'm not sure what color I would get. And no one I knew ever rode a horse. And in my neighborhood, you didn't wear a mask unless you wanted to get picked up by the cops. I couldn't be the Lone Ranger. Then, I learned that Kimo Sabe meant stupid. I didn't want to be the Lone Ranger anymore. But then there was Cosby. He had it made. He had more stuff in his living room than there was on my entire block. His wife, she would always go out shopping for more stuff. They were always getting more things. He really looked out for his kids. They knew how to trick him and get away with it. And he would get all serious and say, "I brought you into this world, and I can take you out." But he was just saying that, though. Then I started to look at all that stuff. There was just way too much. And I told everybody at school that I was going to be a doctor, just like Bill Cosby. And they laughed. But by high school, I was really into sports. I had no shortage of heroes. Michael Jordan, Allen Iverson, Latrell Sprewell, I mean, they were real men, right? I wasn't ready for the pros or anything, But I thought I was good enough anyways. That wasn't it. It was the image. You've had to be tough. Rather you're on court or off. Build up that rage. Use it against your opponent. Channel your aggression. That's not easy, right? Sometimes I get so mad. Sometimes at things that don't even matter. I mean, I try to save it for the game, but sometimes there's just way too much to hold off. But I guess that's what makes you a real man, right? All that rage. Make you tough. Make you strong. Make you ready to fight. But sometimes it's hard to know who to fight. It almost doesn't matter some days. Some days I just have to hit someone. Just punch them and punch them and punch them and punch them until my mind sets off and leaves me alone in my body. Just hit someone without even caring what color hat they have on. I don't know. I don't know if I'll ever be that man. Some days it's like I'm so cool. Like nothing can touch me. Like I walk on the ice. Like I am the ice. Some days it's not like that. And sometimes I don't even know which part of me is the good part. Is it the real man inside who wants me to just hit until I kill something? Or is it the one that just wants me to stop? Wasn't Dr. King a real man? Wasn't Malcolm X? Hey, I'm confused. But you know, I really do need a hat. Maybe it's okay to be confused. At least for now.
The line it is drawn, the curse it is cast. The slow one now will later be fast, as the present now will later be past. The order is rapidly fading, and the first one now will later be last, for the times they are a-changin'.
And you have nothing to do. You won't go wrong. Oh no, this is-
media unit. And Casto is getting applause, but a big hand for Kyla on the sound design. Kyla's got a dream. She wants to end up working at the BBC. And with your support, we can get her there. A couple things quick. We are auditioning. So if you are a teen or know a teen who should be up here with us, please pass the word on. The number is in the program. Also, your comment cards in the program have pencils for those of you who need it. Please give us the comments on the show. That's how we grow. Also, a proud note, in May, we'll be having a mad tea party to celebrate our 35th year. And in that, yes, thank you. And in that time, almost 80% of our folks are in the industry in careers. So please fill out the comment cards. And Sandra, thank you so much for having us. Folks are passing the baskets for our scholarship fund. Please help us out. Thank you.
Thank you, Walt, and the media unit. Yay. I think a couple of the cast members will be around if you'd like, if you have any questions. Walt, also. See you next week.